This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Hello everyone, this is Mike again. So, Fantasy in the Sky. A few weeks back on New Year's Eve, the Disney Parks blog gave everyone a treat and live-streamed a special presentation of the Fantasy in the Sky Nighttime Spectacular at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. Fantasy in the Sky was the very first nighttime spectacular at a Disney theme park, notably Disneyland, and while watching that presentation, I found myself thinking about all the different nighttime spectaculars I have enjoyed at the Magic Kingdom over the decades and thought it would be interesting to reminisce about these shows and where they came from and the overall history of fireworks at Disney parks, with special emphasis at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. Now, we all know that Disneyland opened in 1955 and it was at a cost of about $17 million. During the first year of operation, the theme park had guests arriving early and, you know, they enjoyed all the attractions until they had their fill. That fill plus fatigue found them leaving in the late afternoon. Most of the guests seemed to follow this pattern. There was only a small portion of the day's guests that remained until closing time. Now, Walt and his team were constantly trying to figure out how to keep a steady revenue stream so the park would survive. And that would mean doing whatever they could do to not only draw the crowds, but to keep them in the park as long as possible. Of course, the longer guests would stay, the more they would spend. So, you know, you have to remember that, you know, park operations included costs such as cast member wages, electricity, water, all these overhead costs. So a little editorial comment from me here, I think it's important to say that, you know, Walt wanted to make sure that the park would survive. He wanted to make sure he could pay his cast members, pay his bills, and so he needed to do whatever was needed to keep his customers coming back and staying longer. The answer may be fireworks. Now, he was always careful. Walt knew that any type of plan for fireworks would require some thorough thinking, a proper amount of time to test all these things. There were concerns. Guests' safety, smoke filling up the park. Not to mention Disneyland, I mean, fireworks show would annoy their neighbors. It was a lot to consider. So Walt hired an outside fireworks consultant by the name of Harold Aronson to conduct some fireworks tests in the Disneyland parking lot. You know, these tests were done well after the park was closed, and of course the parking lot was empty. That parking lot, I believe, is now California Adventure. Aronson conducted these tests by hand. So he would set up these shells and he would run from rocket to rocket and he lit the fuses by hand. Once they were satisfied with the tests in the parking lot, they moved the test to Disneyland, to the actual park. And Walt, along with several cast members, would station themselves at various locations within the theme park, and they would eventually figure out how to position the fireworks so that they would be seen by guests throughout the park. Now, Harold Aronson would sprint from rocket to rocket, setting off the fireworks by lighting the fuses by hand. Now, you have to remember that when Fantasy in the Sky eventually debuted, there were no technological wizardry at the time. So, it was Harold Aronson basically running from rocket to rocket, lighting the fireworks by hand. He sort of was the first person to choreograph a fireworks show. Eventually, he trained others to help set up the fireworks and execute the show. He also had a nickname. It was Harold Mickey Aronson. Kind of interesting. He became Disney's first pyrotechnician, and he designed and shot off thousands of shows. He ended up working for the Disney company for 50 years. One thing I want to say, it's important to mention that just like was done for animated movies, the show creators put together a storyboard for the show. So now you can understand how the blending of the pyro, fireworks, and music and storytelling, it all began to emerge. And this actually was the start of putting together what I'm going to call fireworks choreography, I guess. Here's some trivia. When they started putting together a storyboard for Fantasy in the Sky in Disneyland, one of those storyboard artists who worked on that project was a guy by the name of Roy Williams. Now, who is Roy Williams? Well, if you've ever watched the Mickey Mouse Club, he was known as Uncle Roy. So we've got a lot of things happening now. We've got the first ever fireworks storyboard being put together. We've got Mickey Aronson beginning to do things with fireworks and fireworks choreography that has never been done before. And all this would be the foundation for future Disney Parks nighttime spectaculars. We need to recognize that Harold Mickey Aronson became an Imagineer who basically imagineered electronic and computerized firing systems. He was the first guy to implement digital firing technologies. He standardized safety principles regarding the use of fireworks. And he was the pioneer in terms of theatrical pyrotechnics for stage entertainment, I guess is one way of putting it. So keep in mind, we're still in the late 50s and early 60s, and it would be a while before a system would emerge that would synchronize fireworks with music. I'm getting ahead of myself here. So we had Fantasy in the Sky show debuting in 1958, but it was just the beginning. The first Fantasy in the Sky fireworks show in Disneyland lasted about 6.5 minutes, not much shorter than what we see today. A lot of people will say, hey, did you know that Tink started flying from the castle in Disneyland in 1958 when Fantasy in the Sky started? I don't think that's true, because the Matterhorn had not been built till 1959. And from what I understand, they did not connect to the cable from the castle to the Matterhorn until 1961. So it wasn't until then that we had Tink flying at the beginning of the show. So here's some trivia. The first, quote, Tinkerbell to fly from the Disneyland castle to the Matterhorn was a woman by the name of Helen Klein. Helen was a circus performer. She had a nickname Tiny because she was tiny. Probably a good name for someone to play Tinkerbell. Anyways, she was a circus performer. And, you know, as a circus performer, she probably was in pretty good shape. She had to be, because here's the interesting other trivia point that I want to make. Helen Klein started performing this Tinkerbell act from the castle to the Matterhorn when she was 71 years old. Think about that. Before we leave the Disneyland part of the story, let me tell you a few more things. It wouldn't be until the late 60s that Disneyland Entertainment developed a system for firing the shells electronically and synchronized that to a musical soundtrack. Disneyland's Fantasy in the Sky does hold the record for the longest running Disney nighttime spectacular. It ran from 1958 to 1996. That's not too shabby. All right. So much for the birth of Fantasy in the Sky at Disneyland. Let's move over to the East Coast and Walt Disney World. Fantasy in the Sky debuted at Walt Disney World on October 24th, 1971, but it wasn't until 1985 that we had Tinkerbell flying from the castle. It took a while for them to figure out, I guess, how to do that safely. Here's another bit of trivia. This may be something that a lot of you know, but then maybe some of you don't. So it's kind of interesting. They used to throw a spotlight on Tink when she flew from the castle. But I think these days her costume kind of lights up, so they don't need the spotlight. Anyway, I'm sure some of you have heard of the term forced perspective. It is used as a special technique, use of an optical illusion to make objects appear that they are further away than they actually are. And when you look at the Cinderella castle, as you go up the castle, the windows become smaller and smaller and smaller, making the castle look like it's a lot taller than it really is. When they first showed Tink flying from the castle, they made sure that she was away from the window, because remember, she's supposed to be a pixie. Pixies are small, they're not life size, and she would have dwarfed the window. So that spotlight did not get turned on until she was about 10 feet from the castle. But again, I think these days Tink's costume lights up, so there's no need for the for that spotlight. When she did leave the castle, she flew and landed somewhere behind Tomorrowland Terrace, and from what I understand, she landed into a huge mattress-like object to save her from crashing. Anyways, that's a little bit of trivia for everyone. Fantasy in the Sky, that was replaced by Wishes in 2003. That fireworks show was much longer than Fantasy. I think it was approximately a 12 or a 13 minute show. It was the first nighttime spectacular where the audience was really treated to a really long time, a really solid story. It was narrated by Jiminy Cricket. He talked to us about the battle between good and evil, and I think the official title for the show was Wishes, a Magical Gathering of Disney Dreams. That show gave us characters such as Belle, Peter Pan, Hercules, Cinderella, Maleficent, a whole bunch among others, and it was at this show that the Imagineers really started using some very special lighting to serve as a dropback for the mood of the show. The show was created by Vice President of Parades and Spectaculars at Walt Disney World at that time. He was his name was Steve Davison. Everybody remembers the song Star Bright. It was sung by a young girl named Chastity Farris. That's a little bit of a trivia question. Not too many people would know that answer. The song was written by a guy by the name of Gregory Smith. There were other songs in the that's how the show started. There were other songs within the show from movies such as Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, Hercules. The show lasted about 13 years, and it was replaced in May of 2017, it seems like yesterday, by a show, Happily Ever After. Happily Ever After is 18 minutes long. It was 18 minutes long. That's triple the length of the original Fantasy in the Sky time. The technology had given the show creators the ability to use very pretty advanced techniques in the area of projection mapping. They use the castle as their quote screen. When we talk about projection mapping, that allows the people who put the show together to merge the songs and the images and the pyro into a very, very cool presentation. And that castle becomes the landing spot for all those images. The Happily Ever After show came with an original song. It was sung by two people, Angie Kelhauer and Jordan Fisher. It was written by Tim Heintz, and it also had a little bit of a story. Several Disney characters were presented to us, and they were to overcome adversity in their screen roles and enjoy a life that turned out to be, quote, happily ever after. I believe that this show was the first one in which the music was played by a 75-piece orchestra. I think in the past it's been a little bit less, and also used by previously recorded music. But that's pretty interesting. It was a 75-piece orchestra. They used a few more characters that we had never seen before in Nighttime Spectacular. People like Tiana and Merida and Quasimodo and Tarzan, Jack Sparrow, Mulan, Mufasa. It was a sort of an introduction with more characters. Pretty impossible to put every single Disney character in every single fireworks show, so they had to make some decisions. My favorite part of the show is right after the 11-minute mark. This is when we hear Eugene and Rapunzel singing I See the Light from the movie Tangled. I think it's pretty special to see how the projection mapping shows the lanterns drifting up the castle. I really, really enjoy that. Happily Ever After had a pretty short run. It was barely 3 years. Like all of us, its life was interrupted by something called COVID-19. But it did return last summer, and it had a three-month engagement from July through September. Now, before I leave Happily Ever After, I need to mention that on some nights, there has been an additional show some 30 minutes after the conclusion of Happily Ever After. Not too many people realize this. It's called Once Upon a Time. It is a 14-minute show that, in my mind at least, it captures Disney magic like no other nighttime spectacular. And it's not really known that well. There's a song, Once Upon a Time, that's sung. And we hear it as we're looking at images of certain Disney characters that are projected onto the castle. Everything from Ariel to the genie to Chip, Mrs. Potts. During the show, the audience is told about the wonder of stories. The audience is told about how stories can take us anywhere. The projection mapping on the castle is pretty cool, and the music that accompanies the images, to me, is just perfect. I need to point out that during the show, there's absolutely no fireworks until the finale, and that's when it works. It's really, really something. Hopefully someday you'll be able to see it. It's an outstanding presentation. You'll be blown away by the two-minute finale at the end. And listen, if you can, look for it on YouTube. I think you'll be pleased with what you see. Yet there's another castle show I need to mention, because this could be another one that many people have not heard of. And it's been around for a while. It's called Kiss Goodnight. It's about 3 to 4 minutes long. It's pretty much the official closing announcement for the Magic Kingdom. You can usually look for it right around closing time. I actually have seen it played more than once. One night I actually saw it like 2 times. It was played 30 minutes after the fireworks show ended, and then another 30 minutes later. It's kind of easy to describe. So think of the castle draped in a very soft color. Usually the colors are blue, purple, lavender, teal, and the castle is sparkling. During that lighting of the castle, you can hear When You Wish Upon a Star playing in the background, and it's played like a lullaby. And around the 1 minute mark, we hear a narrator thanking us for coming and good night, and then Mickey's telling us he'll see us real soon. After we hear those two, the music just gets really loud. We hear voices singing the ending to When You Wish Upon a Star, and then, well, some neat lighting effects on the castle for the last couple of seconds. Pretty special. I mean, I think it would spoil it for you if I told you what happens at the end. So maybe the next time you're at the Magic Kingdom at night, you may want to check at guest services to see if Kiss Goodnight is scheduled. You could go on YouTube and look for it, but I really think that being there in person really makes a difference when you see the last 5 seconds of that show. All right, so, for the last several minutes, I've taken us off the whole purpose of this little talk. So let's finish with talking about Disney Enchantment at the Magic Kingdom. That debuted on October 1st, the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World, and it had all the components we've been talking about: the projection mapping, the fireworks, the lasers, the searchlights. But it also added some special lighting that bathed all the mercantile structures on Main Street USA. So I guess that was a big difference and made that stand out from the other, its predecessors, you might say. It had an original song. It was called You Are the Magic, sung by Philip Lawrence and Kayla Alvarez. It was written by Philip Lawrence and Davey Nathan, and there's also some narration during the show by Angela Bassett. The show has received mixed reviews, and here's the reason why. Number one, it's the most technologically advanced nighttime fireworks show ever at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. Pretty cool. All the stuff, all the lasers, projection mapping, all that stuff. However, it was the lack of storytelling and the lack of focus on just past and present Walt Disney World attractions that really kind of just fell short. And for many folks, they felt that Happily Ever After was better than Disney Enchantment. Anyways, that's what everyone is saying these days. More characters were introduced. Miguel from Coco. You've got Judy Hopps, Moana, Raya, Luca, Wreck-It Ralph. I don't know how long this show will be around. If you hear rumbling, it's going to be around only for the 50th, which means probably 18 months. Maybe it will be replaced sometime in 2023 by another show, but that remains to be seen. So you can see it's been quite a journey for fireworks at both Disneyland and the Magic Kingdom. And it all started with Fantasy in the Sky. So let me leave you with this thought. For all those years, for all those shows, how many of you knew that this journey was started, nurtured, and developed? Not by Mickey Mouse, but by another Mickey, Harold Mickey Aronson, who many people will say is the father of Fantasy in the Sky, and more likely, the father of Disney Parks Nighttime Spectaculars. That's something that we should not forget. It all started with Harold Mickey Aronson. So let me leave you with this message. This was the message that guests hear during Kiss Goodnight. The Kiss Goodnight show is only 3.5 minutes, about 3.5 minutes. But this is what the guests hear as they're watching on Main Street USA. It goes a little bit like this. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, on behalf of everyone here at the Magic Kingdom, we thank you for joining us today for a magical gathering of family, friends, fun, and fantasy. We hope that your magical journey with us has created wonderful memories that will last a lifetime. Walt Disney said that the Magic Kingdom is a world of imagination, hopes, and dreams. In this timeless land of enchantment, magic, and make-believe are reborn, and fairy tales come true. The Magic Kingdom is a place for the young and the young at heart. A special place where when you wish upon a star, your dreams can come true. Until we see you again, have a safe trip home. Thank you and good night. So, for my co-hosts, Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean and artist extraordinaire, Chris Aliopoulos, this is Mike Scopa saying thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gray saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.